We're continuing on our series through the book of Daniel this week. We've been looking at this theme called flourishing in exile. How can we live faithfully? How can we stay connected to God in our various exile experiences? Daniel, we'll recall, is living in exile in Babylon. He's been taken away from his homeland. And exile has created all kinds of hardship and pressure points for him. There has been the pressure to conform to a new society with different values. There has been suffering that has come through their experiences of oppression. And all of this has happened in a place of separation from community and support. As we've been following their journey, my hope is that this has perhaps spoken to some of your experiences. Thankfully, we do not live in a similar type of exile situation. And yet, I think some of these experiences of exile connect with us. We too face the pressure, I believe, to conform to the patterns of this world. Many of us have endured a season of suffering and loss. This has been a year during this pandemic of many losses and pressure points and stress. And we've been doing all of this in a place of separation, where we've been disconnected from community and those normal rhythms of support. The question that we've been wrestling with is, how do we live faithfully? How do we endure these difficult times? Now, we've discovered Daniel to be very resilient in the face of pressure, and we see that again today in our text. As the people he worked with noticed, that they said they could find no corruption in Daniel because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. That's verse 4 in our text. We see him again continuing to be courageous and faithful when his very life is at risk. And the question I want to wrestle with today is, how might we foster a similar resilience? How might we live with courage, integrity in the face of all these various pressures? Now, throughout the book of Daniel, there's really two sides to this answer. How can we flourish in exile? And the main point that I want to hold up for us today is that we can be faithful because God is faithful. The book of Daniel does not point us to this heroic self-effort. It points us, in fact, to God, who is very present. His presence and his power has been this enduring theme, this enduring reality through their exile experiences. Back in chapter 1, we heard that God caused those overseeing Daniel to have favor for him. God intervened. God gave Daniel wisdom in the face of great pressure. God was with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire, and God is with Daniel today in the lion's den. The hope, friends, that I hope we hear through this message is that God is with us, a very present help in trouble. But with that, there's also a challenge and an invitation for us to stay connected to that God. And what we're going to discover in our text today is some of the spiritual rhythms and practices in Daniel's life that help him stay awake to God, that place himself before God so that God can transform him and empower him and equip him for all these pressures. Here's the main principle that I want to communicate today is this. Our capacity to live with courage and integrity in the face of pressure is dependent on what we do before that pressure comes. Let me say that again. Our capacity to live with faithfulness and integrity and courage in the face of pressure is dependent on what we are doing before we face that pressure. Dallas Willard once said that spiritual formation happens off the spot. And what he means by this is that we live with integrity not when we're on the spot in a pressure moment of temptation to try and harness enough willpower. He says the question we need to ask is, what are we doing off the spot that is preparing us for those moments when the pressure comes? What are the rhythms of spiritual practices that are getting us in touch with God, placing us before God so that he can form and transform us so that when we face these pressure moments, we can live with resilience. Well, it is Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm not one to do a lot of sports analogies. I know it can be kind of off-putting to those who could care less about sports, but if you'll allow me this annual football analogy, I think today is a fitting day. But back in 2007, during the Super Bowl, it was hosted down in Miami, and on Super Bowl Sunday, it was pouring rain, just a torrential rainstorm. Now, the teams were the Indianapolis Colts, and they were playing the Chicago Bears. Little shout out to Ian back there, who's doing camera for us, although you might be disappointed with this analogy. The Chicago Bears actually ended up losing to the Colts, and as commentators were trying to just understand what the difference was, they noticed that Peyton Manning didn't drop a single football, whereas Rex Grossman, sorry Ian, on the Bears dropped the football a couple times and caused some turnovers. Now, there was an interesting interview with Peyton Manning at the end of the game, and they asked him, like, what was your secret? How did you, like, hold on to the ball in these adverse conditions? And he said that once a week, he would have his center spend an hour snapping wet footballs to him. And so that when he was in this pressure moment, as the rain was coming down on Super Bowl Sunday, he was prepared for it. He was prepared for it because of what he had done off the spot. Now, James Brian Smith tells the story in his book on spiritual formation to talk about the difference between trying and training. And I think sometimes in the face of pressure, we say, well, I'm just going to try and be a better person. And when temptation comes, I'll just like harness the energy. Right? But spiritual formation happens off the spot. It's this question of what are these practices, these rhythms that I am doing that are shaping me, forming me for when the pressure comes. In our text today, we have a glimpse into what Daniel does off the spot. We have a little window into his rhythms of spiritual practice that I want to highlight today and talk a little bit about, because I think this helps us discover what types of rhythms in our lives will prepare us for these moments of pressure. We're going to talk really about Daniel's prayer life today, and I want to organize our thoughts around a couple of things. One, I want to just look at how he prioritizes prayer. Secondly, I want to look at how he protects that prayer in the face of pressure to maybe give it up. And then we're going to discover at the end of the story how he is deeply empowered by those experiences when he faces this pressure point in the lion's den. And so we read in chapter 6, verses 10, when Daniel went home to his upstairs room where the windows were open toward Jerusalem, and three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he had done before. We see this rhythm of fixed hour prayer. When I was preparing for this series, I read through the book of Daniel one time through in one sitting, and I noticed how often Daniel has this reflex of prayer. In chapter 2, when his very life is threatened if he cannot interpret the dream, it says he cried out to God for wisdom and for mercy. Later, when God answered that prayer, he turned back to God with prayer. Next week, Stephen's going to look at his prayer of confession, a specific type of prayer. Throughout the gospel, Daniel prays, and we see in chapter 6 that he has this very intentional rhythm of prayer. He prioritizes it and has this rhythm to it. Now, I think this is instructive to us, and I think that one of the challenges that this text poses to us is to reflect on what our rhythms of prayer are. Daniel's model here suggests to us that there should be some intention to our prayer. To not just leave it up to a whim or to when I feel like it. I think there may be a temptation in our life to have more of a spontaneous approach to prayer. And perhaps there might even be a resistance to this idea of having structure, because there is this other extreme of having this legalism, just wooden, going through the motions of a fixed hour prayer with not actually feeling it. But there is this biblical example which actually shows up in many areas where those who are empowered by the Spirit, who are acting with integrity, have this intentional rhythm to their prayer life. There's an interesting snapshot of this actually in the book of Acts. And imagine these disciples in the early part of Acts. Here we think of these spirit-empowered disciples who are just going with the flow of the Spirit. There's spontaneity and there is openness, which is a wonderful thing and it is a true thing. And yet these spirit-empowered disciples, we discover, have a very similar rhythm of prayer. In Acts chapter 3, 1, it says, "One day Peter and John were going up to the temple at the time of prayer at 3 in the afternoon." Just this interesting detail in the midst of this explosion of the church right after Pentecost Sunday. What sustained these spirit-empowered people was fixed hour prayer. Perhaps this text today gives us the opportunity to reflect on our rhythm, on our rule of life. Are there some things that anchor us, that bring us back to prayer, so that when we face these pressure moments, we are prepared? If we leave our prayer life up to a spontaneous whim, "I'll pray when I feel like that," I suspect that we will find ourselves easily distracted and pulled in many directions. Gordon Smith at Regent College, one of my professors, said that if we have no rhythm to our prayer, we are basically making the evil one our spiritual director. And it's a bit of an intense statement, but he's actually was commenting on a book I referenced recently by C.S. Lewis called The Screwtape Letters. It's this book of a senior demon writing letters to his nephew, teaching them how to disrupt people's spiritual lives. And the main advice that Wormwood gives to his nephew is to distract them. When he feels like praying, make him realize he's hungry. When he's entering into worship, make him notice the squeaky boot of his neighbor sitting next to him and get him fixed on that, right? There's just the distraction that we're pulled. If we leave prayer up to a whim, we're going to be pulled in all kinds of directions. Are there some ways that we might prioritize prayer in our lives? But here's the challenge, and I'm with you in this challenge, that there are all kinds of things that seek to pull us away from these rhythms. And I've noticed in a number of my conversations with folks that this has been particularly hard this year when our other rhythms are out of sync, where we're working at home, or we don't have some of the normal anchors in our week on Sunday mornings or with other people as our kids are at home more. This has been a year where my rhythms have really struggled to maintain in the midst of all these pressures, and maybe you can connect with that yourself. In our text today, we have this example of Daniel facing pressure to continue his rhythms of prayer. There's this conspiracy that is drawn up by his co-workers who are jealous of them. They convince the king to outlaw prayer for just 30 days so that they can catch Daniel in the act of prayer and have him removed from office. That's part of the scheme that they have. Now, I'd love us to just see this as almost a metaphor for some of the things that maybe pull us away from prayer. Thankfully, we do not face the same pressure that Daniel does to give up on prayer. Prayer is not outlawed for us. We do not face that type of persecution. Though I do want to pause and just remind us that many of our brothers and sisters across this world do face those adverse circumstances. I think we should pause every once in a while and realize that we ought to be praying for our brothers and sisters who are in places of deep experiences of persecution. The martyrdom, the oppression that Daniel is threatened with is not just an ancient reality. I was reading recently in the World Almanac on Christianity that there were more martyrs in the 20th century than all the centuries combined prior to the 20th century. There was an estimated 45,400,000 Christians who died for their faith last century. So this is a contemporary issue that we ought to be prayerful for and be grateful that we do not face those types of pressures. But I do want us to name some of the pressures that we do face in our culture that threaten to throw off our rhythms, that pull us in all kinds of different directions. We are not called to bow to the God of Darius, who is the emperor in this text. But as we've explored in this Daniel story, there are all kinds of other idols that we are called to bow to worship, to live our life for. There are all kinds of pressures that pull us away call us to not find time for these rhythms of prayer. I was reading a book last week. I had to take a day away just to have some silence. I took a day for retreat and prayer. And I was reading a book on clergy self-care and spiritual practices. And it was just a good reminder that as leaders in the church, but all of us, we need to make sure that we aren't so focused on the busyness and the doing of work that we neglect our souls. And the writer was saying that there are three temptations that seek to disrupt our rhythm of prayer. And he says it is the temptation of achievement, of affirmation, and adrenaline. And maybe one of those maybe speaks to you today, but we are in a culture that praises achievement, and sometimes internally we long to just prove our worth by doing more and more, and that can easily begin to crowd out these rhythms of prayer. Others of us are driven by the desire for affirmation and to please people, and so in the midst of our desire to pray, we find ourselves instead jumping to the demands or the requests of others so that we can be affirmed. And still others of us are addicted to the adrenaline of a busy life. We want action. We want to be doing things. We want to be fulfilled in those busy activities. Do one of those things perhaps cause you to shut the windows of your room and get off your mat and be busy instead of finding this time for prayer? Sometimes I think we are, in our world, not threatened by legal reasons not to pray, but by a busy culture and by our contemporary addictions that crowd out our tendency to pray. Well, as the story unfolds in Daniel, we are reminded again why we need to protect these rhythms, because, friends, we face all kinds of pressure points. Martin Luther once said that the busier his day was, the more he realized he had to pray, that he had to carve out that space for prayer, because in those pressure points, we need to be awakened to the presence of God, to rest in his provision, to be empowered by his Spirit. We need prayer. And we discover as the story unfolds that through Daniel's cultivated life of prayer, he has a profound awareness of God as he is now sealed off in this den with the lions. Friends, we discover, just as Daniel does, that we ought to expect hardship. Jesus has said, "In this world you will face trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." We find ourselves in that tension, this already but not yet. One commentator notices that through Daniel's story, we are reminded we are not saved from danger, but saved in danger. And so we will face these hard things. And because of that, we need God even more. We need to cultivate a connectedness, to abide in his power and his provision, so that when these inevitable challenges come, we will be with God and we will be aware of God. And that is what unfolds in this story. We read in verse 17 that a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Daniel was sealed off in this den with lions. But in the next morning, we discover this hope. As Daniel says, "My God sent his angels, and he shut the mouths of the lions." God was with him in that terrifying night, and that he emerged into a new day unscathed. Here's the hope that I want to proclaim, the gospel I want to proclaim to you today. Commentators note that there is an allusion here to another story, a story that happens at the end of our Gospels, where we hear after Jesus was crucified, he too was sealed away in a tomb. But he emerged as an even greater Daniel. For the next day, we discovered this hope that God emerged from that sealed tomb into new and resurrected life. And the call to prayer, friends, is that in the face of evil, in the face of oppression, in the face of hardship, we have the capacity to call upon this resurrected Christ, a God who promises to be with us in those circumstances that feel hopeless, a God who promises to be a very present help in trouble. We call upon the God of resurrection in our prayers. And so let us heed this call to prayer. For as we turn to God, we too will emerge from the terrors of the night. For a new day will dawn, the day of the Lord. For we call upon a God who emerged from that sealed tomb victorious over the things that we fear, victorious over death itself. Friends, may we be called back to this life of prayer so that we may discover God with us in the pressures we face. Would you join me in prayer? God, we want to call upon you. We thank you for your word. I pray that it would come alive in our hearts today. That you would draw us back to prayer, not out of duty, but out of desire. For you promise to be with us, and you invite us to have the opportunity to commune with you, the living God. Lord, may you protect all the things that seek to pull us away from you, for we need you so deeply. Lord, would you be a very present help to those who find themselves in trouble today? We pray this in your name. Amen.